This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and use the coupon code WarRocketAjax to save $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax, to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. Matt Wilson is on vacation this week, but he will be back next week, and I hope he's having a fantastic time down in Charleston, South Carolina, as we record this. But I am Chris Sims, and filling in is the emergency backup co-host that we have gone to time and time again, Kieran Shiak. Kieran, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here, as always. I think this is the shortest turnaround of me being on the show than me being on the show again. Only a couple of weeks since King of Trails.
Yeah, because you were, like, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, you were on as well.
Yeah, well, I'm always happy to be here and wishing Matt the best on his vacation, a well-earned one.
Yeah, and this is actually really good timing for you to be on the show, promotion-wise. Because you have just launched a couple of new podcasts. So, Kieran, I am giving you right now at the top of the show, before we even do our plugs, before I even do War Rocket Ajax plugs, I am going to let you plug the new Good Egg podcasts.
People know me already. They might be familiar with my long-standing podcast, Journey into Misery, where I explain complicated comics, characters, and concepts to my patient and perpetually perplexed fiancé, Helena Hart. We have launched two more podcasts under a banner which we're calling Good Egg Podcasts, after what Helena refers to superheroes as, good eggs and bad eggs being villains. So we're Good Egg Podcasts now. Journey to Misery is under there. We have two monthly shows that are also under there. The first one is Animal Crackers, which is pretty much the reverse of Journey to Misery. So whereas Journey to Misery is me explaining comic book continuity to Helena, something that I am somewhat of an expert in, I'd say, by now. Animal Crackers is Helena, who is a zoobiology student and works in various zoos and aquariums and stuff. It's her explaining, like, animal facts and animal information and, like, the history of animals and what we know about them to me. So it's like an inverse of Journey to Misery in that way. It's a lot of fun. The first episode is about hamsters. The second episode should... Well, it should be up now. That was the plan. But Helena still hasn't wrote the notes for it. So, putting her on blast a little bit. But should be up soon. That's Animal Crackers at CrackersCast on Twitter. The second show is Zero Hour, which is a comic book interview podcast where I talk to guests about their earliest memories of comic book culture. So, Chris, you were the first guest. And we talked about Batman. We talked about The Punisher. We talked about X-Men. It was a lot of fun. There's a new episode of that recorded and hopefully coming out in a day or two, and that's at The Zero Hour Cast on Twitter, where you can find everything on the website, which is goodeggpodcasts.com.
And who's the second guest on Zero Hour?
The second guest, I'll reveal it now. It might be going up this week. It might have some audio stuff that I'm going to need to tinker with, so I don't want to say for certain. The second guest is none other than my friend and yours. I was going to do the big long spiel, then I forgot it. It's Kyle Starks. It's
talking about Eisner nominated Hollywood Kyle Six Castle Starks.
The Rick and Morty franchise. Yeah, that is the one.
Remember? Yeah, well, Kieran, if people enjoy you appearing on this show, and I know it's always fun for me when you're here, definitely go check those out. I had a blast talking to you on Zero Hour. That's one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done, in all honesty, because I just got to talk about fun stuff that I remember from when I was a kid. So it was a good one. But today on this show, you're here. Also, Tom Fowler is going to be here. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. He's here to talk about Rick and Morty Volume 3, which he wrote and did an amazing job with. But he is also here to talk about convention season is almost over. We've got to get through New York Comic Con. But as we close out convention season 2016, Tom is here to talk to us about some amazing convention horror stories. That's going to be awesome. But before we get into that, we've got a lot of show to get through. So I say we just go ahead and get right to it.
Let's do it.
The first thing we're going to do is just real quick. Matt usually has the list of people to thank who are our newest Patreon backers. So since Matt is not here, that means that list is not here. But just want to give a quick shout out to everybody who's gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and chipped in a couple bucks every month to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. If you have not checked it out yet, $5 gets you access to all the bonus content we've done, cut content from the interviews, stuff where it's just Matt and I talking about stuff that we don't get to on the show, ad-free episodes you can get if you're sick of hearing us talk about ads. Definitely head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and check that out.
There's also a really cool thing with Patreon now, where if a Patreon you support has an audio feed, they do bonus episodes, you can subscribe to a personalized RSS feed. So if you use iTunes or another podcatcher, you can put that RSS feed in and it will download the every audio file that goes up at your whatever level you support at. So if you support Warwick Ajax on Patreon and use the RSS feed, you'll get the ad-free episode straight to your phone. You'll get the bonus content straight to your phone. It's super convenient. And like as a Warrock Ajax patron, like I've used it and it's really simple. And it's a great way to get that bonus content without fiddling around with iTunes pages or whatever.
Yeah, and that means that you can get like the ad-free episodes of the show synced directly to your phone, just like normal episodes. And I got to say, people were thanking me and Matt for implementing that. I know I didn't do it, and I'm pretty sure that Matt didn't do it either. But it's awesome because, you know, I support podcasts like How to Wrestling on there, and they do a bonus episode every month for each WWE pay-per-view. So those are awesome to get just straight to the phone. So yeah, check that out. Like Patreon's doing some really cool stuff, but that's it. That's all. We're done with Patreon. It is now time for us to kick off the show in earnest. Let's do some checks and wrecks, Kieran.
Yes, do it. So come on and diggity-check
yourself before you wreck yourself. All right, Kieran, you are the guest of the show, so we're going to start with you. Kieran, what are you checking in with this week?
Well, whenever I'm on, I think I said this last time as well, because last time I was on, I got engaged a couple of weeks prior. I like to maybe pull it out to a month or so and find the most interesting thing that's happened to me. And I want to talk a little bit about my trip to New York that we did after King of Trios. Because King of Trios was fantastic. It's the best weekend of my year, without a doubt. But after Trios was over, me, Helena, and Dan got in the car and drove from Bethlehem through New Jersey to New York. And Helena and I had a week in New York, and it was fantastic. We stayed in a really nice neighborhood in Chelsea, which was really convenient. It was close to loads of subway stops, loads of cool restaurants and stuff that we could walk to. The High Line was in walking distance, which is really, really nice if you're ever in New York. You should definitely visit the High Line. We went to the top of the Rock, and this was all really great for me because I've done all this before. The first time I went to America, I did this exact trip. I went to Trios, then I went to New York for a week. Last year, which was Helena's first year in America, we literally came for Trios. We flew in on Thursday, we flew out on Monday. We had 6 hours in New York either side of that, and that was it. So I was really committed to giving Helena a proper, like, tourist, get everything in you want to see in New York while we were there. So getting to share those moments that I'd already experienced with Helena for the first time was really, really special. Like, looking over the New York skyline was really great. But the highlight for us, and especially the highlight for Helena, was we went to 3 zoos in 3 days, which is something I think you can only really do in New York. So we went to the Bronx Zoo on Wednesday, which Helena said is the best zoo she's ever been to, and like that's what she does for a living, is go to and work in zoos. So it's a fantastic zoo, and on Wednesdays it's free. So if you're in New York on a Wednesday with nothing to do, get the subway up to the Bronx and go check out the Bronx Zoo. On Thursday we went to Central Park Zoo, and on Friday we went to Prospect Park Zoo, which I really like. I've not been to that particular zoo before, but it's laid out. It's very small, but it's laid out really well. And a real highlight for me was I saw 3 separate red pandas over the course of 3 days. So I can't imagine a better holiday than that. And also on the last day, we went to a trendy rooftop bar in Chelsea. And one bouncer asked us for ID, and the second bouncer went, "No, he's wearing a Shinsuke Nakamura t-shirt. Let him in."
So you would give your vacation 3 out of a possible 3 red pandas.
Absolutely. Although there are 2 other facilities under the banner that those 3 zoos operate under. There's an aquarium and there's a zoo in Queens. So next time we go, we're going to try and hit all 5 in a week.
Well, I think you should. I honestly think you should. Because what people might not know about Kieran Chiak and Helena Hart is that y'all love zoos. I don't know how they wouldn't know that, because you talk about it constantly.
It's something that Helena's brought out in me, especially. Like, it's like a love for animals is something that I've developed over the past 2 years. So I do like zoos and I do like red pandas.
Okay, now this is going to be dated even by the time it goes up in 4 days. But did you take the Patronus test on Pottermore?
I did. I got a horse of some sort.
Yeah. Like I'm just throwing this out there right now. Pottermore is bullshit. I'm sorry. I got sorted into Slytherin, and then it tells me that my Patronus is a white swan, and that is clearly, like, that is inaccurate. Both of those. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I got sorted into Slytherin as well, but I found that quite accurate, to be honest.
Yeah. That's,
I know me and Aiden are both Slytherin, and we're very proud of it.
I even got the coin flip at the end, so it was, like, it was pretty clearly between Slytherin and Ravenclaw, and I had a... I was very upset by the way that thing came down. As for my check this week, I think the biggest piece of news that I've got, if you saw the solicitations go up for the new Marvel books, X-Men 92 is coming to an end at number 10, which, you know, like, it sucks. It sucks that it's ending. You know, I'm not gonna lie. We really wanted to, you know, obviously... One of the first things that Chad told me about writing comics when we started writing comics together, not even, before we even started writing comics together, when we were just like, you know, friends and coworkers at the comic book store, he always told me that the way he thought of things, like, that he would like to do one day, is that he never thought of them in issues. He always thought of them as runs. And so when we got X-Men 92 as an ongoing, like, we, you know, obviously we wanted it to go forever. Like, we wanted to go for I was talking about what we wanted to do in number 21, like what we wanted to do in the annual, even, stuff that I've pitched to, our editors, Jordan and Heather Antos. Only getting 10 issues of the ongoing is, you know, it's tough. Because we had so much that we wanted to do. And maybe, hopefully, someday we'll get to maybe revisit it and maybe do some of that stuff. But on the other hand, at the end of the day, like, by the time it's all said and done, we will have had 14 issues of a series. And 5 of them are double-sized, because all the miniseries issues were double-sized. And the number 10 is going to be an extra-sized 30-page issue. So... we're going to have 3 paperbacks worth of an alternate continuity series that kind of came out of a crossover event as a really sort of unexpected thing. And at the end of the day, that's pretty cool. And you're going to see a lot of weird stuff. You're going to see a lot over the next 4 issues, over 7, 8, 9, and 10. If you think this story is going one way, it's definitely going another. Based on what you've seen. So we are doing as much as we can in the time that we have left. It's going to be the biggest story that I think we've ever told, including the miniseries, which I thought got, like, pretty big there at the end. We're going to be bringing in some new characters. We're going to be bringing in some old favorites. If you liked the way that... I think I said in one of the exposition interviews on CBR that the way we did that first arc... was that I was kind of imagining it as a crossover between the X-Men and the Midnight Suns books, but those books don't exist right now, so you never got that half of the story. So imagine a crossover between all the other books, all the other X books in 1992, and you've kind of got an idea of where we're going to be going in these last 4 issues. It's going to be big. It's going to be fun. We're really excited about the story that we're telling. We've still got Bad Blood with Rob coming next. Chad's going to be doing Young Blood next year, which is going to be awesome. And I can't wait to see it. But yeah, the final issue of X-Men 92 has been announced. So I do want to say thanks to everybody who's been reading it all along. And if you haven't read it, give it a shot. The first volume of the miniseries is out now and has been out for a while. The first volume of the ongoing, which has the vampire story in it, X-Men 92 Volume 1, The World is a Vampire, is out in October, which makes it perfect Halloween reading. At the end of the day, it kind of sucks that it's coming to an end at 10, but it is going to be fun, and we're having a lot of fun doing it. So that is what my check is this week. Next week, there's going to be an MMA update. Or do you want an MMA update right now, Kieran? Because yeah, I do have one.
Like, I'm always down for an MMA update.
Okay, it's time for Ding 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 MMA update, and we may or may not be getting a jingle for it soon. Keep your ears peeled. I don't think I have been back to the Muay Thai gym since the last time we talked, but I've been trying a lot of other stuff using ClassPass. And I tried CrossFit for the first time, and I kind of loved it. Like, it was surprisingly, like, not super bro-y, and everyone was, like, really, really nice at the class we went to, which was awesome. Because, you know, it's entirely about who are the, you know, who's the instructor, who are the people. That's the thing that I found with martial arts, and it's the thing that I'm finding in, you know, going and trying out studios for, like, strength training and yoga. But I think the best thing that happened in CrossFit, other than that Aiden loves strength training, was that a guy came up to me as the workout before ours was finishing and told me he liked the show, which was super awesome. Because nothing puts me more at ease than someone coming up to me in public and telling me they like me. So that was really, really cool. And I am happy to have done that. I did not pass out from doing squats this time, but I did kind of stop a little earlier than everybody else, and that's fine. You gotta listen to your body. So strength training and 20 Riptine continues as we do more and more exercise. Kieran, what's your rec this week?
My rec this week was actually recommended to us by Aiden, and I believe Megan of Hard Times Podcast also recommended it over Trios Weekend. It is Jane the Virgin, which I'm not sure if you talked about already on the show.
I believe I talked about it briefly on the show. It's great.
Yeah, I'm not sure how in-depth you talk about it. Yeah, it's... I described it on Twitter as, like... Because there's so much happening in it, I compared it to Scandal, but it doesn't give me anxiety like Scandal does. Like, the way events ramp up in Scandal make me, like, out of breath by the end of an episode, whereas Jane the Virgin is comparable because there's, like, seven or eight characters, and if you put them all in a circle and, like, just drew the way they're all connected to each other, it would basically be a complete circle by the end of it. It's this huge American telenovela. The basic premise being a young woman who is a virgin accidentally gets pregnant. I won't even say how that happens because that's a big plot point in the first episode. But it's about her and her family and her fiancé and the father and his family and his wife and his business. And then Jane's father comes into the mix. And there's just so many characters and everything, like, it's a very rewarding show. Like, you feel like you've got your money's worth after every episode. There's just so much going on at all times. It's a show that kind of demands your attention, but in a way that you want to give your attention over. So yeah, we're both big, big fans of it, and we've watched like 3 or 4 episodes, but we know that it's a show that we absolutely love.
Yeah, it is. I can highly recommend it as well. It's really fantastic. But yeah, it's a really good one. My recommendation this week is going to be a little bit older than yours, but it is also a television show. It's called Star Trek: The Next Generation, 1987, network television. This is something that I've talked about before, that I've written about it before, but I don't really talk about it too often because it very rarely comes up. But when I was like 10 or 11 years old in like fourth or fifth grade, I was super into Star Trek, like loved it, like wore my toy communicator pin to school levels here. And in the years since, like, it's something that I've really moved away from, which is weird because a lot of the other stuff that I was into back then, like Batman and pro wrestling and Ninja Turtles, like has stuck with me in a way that Star Trek never did. So I went from like loving it to just not caring. Even before like by the time the next gen movies hit, like, I don't know if I've seen one, but of late, I kind of wanted to watch some more of it. I think it might've started with the big anniversary. It might've been when Aiden saw Star Trek Beyond in the theater and decided maybe she wanted to check out some of the old TV shows, but she kind of started watching, the original series and a little bit of Deep Space Nine, which I remembered being fun. And it's really kind of surprising looking back on Deep Space Nine, how much it feels like Mass Effect. So keep that in mind if you're looking for something to watch. But, I went back to Next Gen because I had so many memories of it. You know, like, I know those characters, like, pretty, pretty well. And one of the things that I found really rewarding about going back and watching it, and I will say, I skipped straight to season 3. I did not, like, I watched Encounter at Farpoint, which is the pilot episode, and then I just kind of jumped ahead to skip out on the Too Tight uniforms and Dr. Pulaski and all that nonsense, and straight to season 3. And one of the things that I really liked about it is that it's extremely episodic. And a lot of the shows that I watch now, a lot of the modern shows, you know, Jane the Virgin is like this, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is like this, and Steven Universe is like this, and Elementary is like this. But, like, even when they're episodic, they're all contributing to a much larger ongoing story that's very, very important. Like, especially in Jane the Virgin. But, you know, Steven Universe, which I love, is very much driven by these bits and pieces of the ongoing story, more than the subject of the original or the individual episodes themselves, I think. And so going back and seeing something that's actually really well done, but that is built on that episodic setup of here are the characters and this is what they're doing this week, is weirdly refreshing and weirdly engaging. Even though there is like a larger story, and even though there are callbacks and there's character development and things that move on, the fact that it is built to be an episodic show in a way that I don't know if good television is anymore is really interesting. Like, even, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is kind of built on telling a progressive storyline as it goes on. And it's really, really fun to just get 45 minutes of television that's just based on what that individual problem is. I like that a lot. And also, if you have not taken Star Trek The Next Generation out for a spin lately, Patrick Stewart's an amazing actor. Like, I know that, and I know we all know that, but you sometimes forget that dude's really, really good at acting. He is an incredible actor, and makes Picard an incredible character in a way that I don't know. Like, I don't know if it resonated with me when I was a kid as much. Like, I don't know if I appreciated him as much as a character and as an actor as I do now. Kind of knowing, you know, now that we've had Patrick Stewart for 20 years, you know, God, almost 30, I guess, 30 years in popular culture. More if you go back to Dune, I guess. But yeah, Star Trek The Next Generation really holds up, I think. And so I'm kind of going back to it, and maybe then I'll finally get around to watching Voyager and seeing Dwayne The Rock Johnson put the rock bottom on Seven of Nine, because I never got to see that when it first happened. But that absolutely happens.
Yeah, I really want to revisit it because I have very, very, very big memories of it. I've spoken before on my own podcast, and I think on Ajax once or twice, about my granddad. One of his fondest memories, at least of me as a child, was watching The Next Generation together. And, like, as a kid, I'd do the Space to Final Frontier bit. I have no memory of this, and it would like always like not bug him, but he'd be like, "Oh, do you not remember doing that together?" So I really want to maybe try and like rekindle some of those memories, or like rejig some of those memories, and like that time with my granddad through Next Generation, which he was always the biggest Star Trek fan. So with everyone watching it, with you and Aiden watching it, it like Helena and I kind of want to start with the original series and just like go as far through Star Trek as we can before we get tired of it.
The original series, I mean, you know, it's there's some great television in there, but if you watch them, it's harder for me to like marathon that or you know leave it on in the background while I work, because so many of those like first season episodes are based around the plot of something in space is making the crew act weird, and it's, you know, it's always an invisible gas or something that, you know, they don't have to put in the special effects budget. All they have to do is get somebody to act weird for a little while. But you know, it's fun. Like Next Gen is kind of, now that I'm all the way through Hercules, the Legendary Journeys, once again, it's a perfect, you know, background writing TV. And I will say, like, that first episode with Reginald Barclay, with Dwight Schultz as Lieutenant Broccoli, that thing holds up. That thing's really, really good. So you know, check it out. Kieran, you want to talk about some comic books?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. What do you want to talk about first, Kieran? You want to talk about the Night of the Monster Men crossover that's going on?
Yeah, two really, really, really good issues of that crossover came out this week.
There was Batman number 7, and there was Nightwing number 5. And one of the things that I've really liked about the, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, Matt and I, the Rebirth era is doing a really good job of making each of the Batman books feel distinct, which is something that it can do because it's got that biweekly schedule, you know? But Detective doesn't feel like Batman, and Batman doesn't feel like All-Star Batman. And so I was kind of worried about how that would go into the crossover between the books, because when the crossovers happen, things tend to get smoothed out, you know? But these just kind of feel like the next kind of in-between arcs for Batman and for Detective and for Nightwing. And I really, really liked it.
Yeah, it's both like really, really good issues, and getting to see characters like Batwoman and Clayface show up in like the main Batman book, and even Nightwing, who has been like both Nightwing and Batgirl started Rebirth purposefully away from the Bat family. So seeing Nightwing come back and deal with this huge threat is really fun to see.
Yeah, it's got a lot of good stuff. And one of the things that I'm really starting to notice, and I think there's going to be a Comics Alliance article about this, maybe this week. You know how for a decade after Batman the Animated Series, Batman was influenced by the look and the feel of that show? Like, especially the 2000 New Gotham kind of soft reboot. Like, they redesigned Gotham to be more Art Deco-y and everything. I feel like that's happening again now, but it's weirdly happening with Brave and the Bold Batman, which is fucking awesome.
It's all that we want, really.
Yeah, that's like, if we could somehow get Brave and the Bold Aquaman out of this, it would be perfect. But we've got this Batman who's kind of constantly, like, every book in Rebirth that has Batman in it is about Batman teaming up with someone. It's about the Batman family. You know, Batman was about Batman and Gotham and Gotham Girl and Duke. And All-Star is about Batman and Duke and even, you know, to an extent, Two-Face. And Detective is all about the Batman family. And so kind of leaning into that and embracing Batman as a team-up character, but then also giving Batman, like, jetpacks and chainsaws and all these accessories, is it really feels like Brave and the Bold, but in, you know, filtered through the lens of the comics that are obviously going to run a little bit darker. And I kind of love that. And I feel like that's the first big crossover of the Rebirth era for Batman is Batman fighting, like, dragon monsters. It's like, yeah, that's the shit I want. That's the superhero-ass shit I want. I love it. It's really great.
My favorite moment in both of these issues, not for the reason you might think, there's a lot of good stuff in here, but my favorite moment was the jetpack, because when they announced Rebirth, they said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that they wanted to bring a sense of community back to the DC universe and the DC characters. And Wally West in the comics even said that, like, the friendships and the relationships in the community is something that was robbed from these characters. So seeing Batman being like, oh yeah, that jetpack that John Henry built for me works perfectly, is like, yeah, yeah, like, that's fun. Like, Batman and Steel, like, know each other and, like, share tech. Just,
yeah, like, it's...
small things like that is why I love the DC universe.
Yeah, because it feels like a universe again. And I feel like that's one of the things that the New 52 era was missing. You know, Matt and I talked about it last week. Like, even Justice League felt like it was a different book. Like a different universe than Batman. Like, there was not, like, a lot of crossover. But yeah, Batman kind of, you know, talking about John Henry Irons is pretty fucking rad, I gotta say. And again, I feel like it feels that because it's something that would have happened in 1998. And that's, you know, my ideal comics reading time. But I like it, and I think it's really, really strong. And I'm excited about Night of the Monster Men, and I'm excited about the next arc of Batman, where he's going to put together his own private suicide squad and go down to Santa Prisca to fight fucking Bane over the Psycho Pirate. Because, again, that's like, you know, Batman leads the Suicide Squad is a very 2016 concept, because, you know, DC wants Suicide Squad to be a top-tier book and a marketable franchise. But it's also a very weirdly Brave and the Bold concept. It's a weirdly Justice League Unlimited concept. It's a weirdly 1998-style concept, you know? Like, there's a lot of fun stuff happening right now.
I can absolutely see, like, Brave and the Bold Batman, like, recruiting, like, Harley Quinn and Deadshot and... I mean, maybe they won't even say the name Deadshot, I don't know. But, like, I can see him recruiting, like, a bunch of, like, Suicide Squad-themed characters and, like, Justice League Unlimited. Never saying the word Suicide Squad, but if you know, you know.
If it was on Brave and the Bold, it would have to be Task Force X, I think.
But I don't think they need to even say Task Force X. Like, Brave and the Bold is very good at just, like, letting you fill in the blanks with a lot of stuff.
If we get fucking Commandy showing up by the end of this story, then I will be very, very happy. Now, I am, you know, speaking of DC books that I really want to get back into, I'm behind on Green Lanterns, but you wanted to talk a little bit about Green Lanterns number 7.
Yeah, Green Lanterns is... It took me a couple of issues to get into it, and I might have something coming up on Comics Lines about this particular aspect of the book, but I really got into it recently, specifically through the character of Jessica Cruz, because Green Lanterns, the premise is Hal Jordan is off in space rebuilding the Green Lantern Corps because it's been decimated for some reason I honestly don't know. I stopped reading Green Lantern a fair while ago, but he's left Earth with the two new Green Lanterns, who is Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz, and they share a power battery. So it's like, I think even Sam Humphries, who is the writer, I think he's described it as like, it's like Lethal Weapon with Green Lanterns. Like, it's these two characters, and they have to get on, and even more so than Lethal Weapon, like, they can't be Green Lanterns if they don't get on because they share this power battery. But Jessica Cruz is a really, really interesting character to me, because the core concept of Green Lantern is the ability to overcome great fear. Like, Hal Jordan can do it, Guy Gardner can do it, Jon Stewart, Kyle Rayner, all these characters can overcome great fear. That's always been shown as just, like, something that's innate. Like, oh yeah, Hal Jordan, like, he's a fighter pilot. Of course he can overcome great fear, he does it every day. Jon Stewart is a Marine, Guy Gardner is, like, cocksure. But none of the characters until Jessica Cruz have really tackled what an achievement it is to overcome great fear on a daily basis. Jessica Cruz is a character with social anxiety and an origin story that I'm not a fan of personally. It's an origin story full of assault and, like, watching her friends die and sexual assault, and it's something I find kind of personally distasteful. But it's kind of resulted in this really fascinating character. The idea that, like, in the first few issues, like in the first five or six issues, Jessica can't summon a construct, because having the ability to overcome great fear and overcoming great fear are two very different things. And seeing that play out with a character that has social anxiety like Jessica has is fascinating, it's nuanced, it's a really new way into the Green Lantern franchise that I think maybe if you find it hard to get into the Green Lantern franchise, like I know you do, Chris, I think Jessica might be a really interesting way for people to get a new angle in on the concept.
Yeah, I am, you know, Sam Humphries has been on the show. He's a guy that I really love as a creator, and I'm excited about. And everything, you know, Simon Baz has been around for a while, and Jessica Cruz is relatively new. But these are characters that when they were introduced, I wanted to see more from them. And so getting, you know, finally getting them into the spotlight as a team, I think is, you know, it's something that I'm really excited about sitting down with. I'm probably going to try and sit down this weekend and read all that. If I don't have to read every issue of Hex first, you know, the late 80s Jonah Hex post-apocalyptic book, it's a pretty good one. That's what I'm planning to do with my free time.
And I want to say specifically as well, Green Lantern's number 7 is a quiet issue because the last arc was this big, like, rookie Green Lanterns versus the Red Lanterns, and like people of Earth were like infected with rage. Issue 7 is very quiet. It's all set at the Baz family household, as basically Simon has to cook this this like traditional dish that his mum would always cook for him. His mum's coming over, and he's going to tell her he's a Green Lantern and introduce her to his partner, his colleague, essentially. And it's all like, it's seen like a very human side of Simon, who also didn't get the best introduction. Like, the very first thing you ever saw of Simon Baz was a Muslim man in a balaclava, like, pointing a gun at the reader. It was provocative and intentionally so, and I don't think that was a good idea at the time either. But, like Jessica, Simon has grown into this really fascinating character with, like, his supporting cast is really interesting. I think he's got a brother and a sister, and like a sister-in-law and a nephew, and now they have a Guardian of the Universe living in their house as well, which is really interesting. And there's a concept with the Phantom Ring, which is a ring that can channel any emotion that can be wielded by anyone, and is like the Dominators want it, and everyone is converging on Earth after this Phantom Ring. There's a lot of really cool stuff, both character-wise and, like, plot-wise, that's really worth checking Green Lanterns out for.
Listen, I do love the Dominators. So, I think the third thing that we want to talk about very briefly was Trinity number 1, which is Francis Manapul's new book about Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. Big thing in this one, obviously, return of Rainbow Batman to continuity. He's back, sort of. Trinity number 1, I thought, was weirdly slow, but very, very fun. And
beautiful, you know, it had
absolutely beautiful. Rainbow Batman was in it, so.
I came onto G-Chat and said to you, there's this one page in it that you're going to love. And you were like, I'm looking at it right now. And it was the Rainbow Batman page.
Yeah, it was pretty great. So that does it for comics this week. I think we're about to move on into our interview with Tom Fowler. But before we do that, Kieran, we got to talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
Yeah, you talked about this to me last time I was here, but I think I need a refresher.
Okay, well, it's very, very simple. Loot Crate is a subscription service, and every month they are going to send you a box. And in that box is going to be 6 to 8 items themed around your favorite pop culture franchises. You get it for less than $20 a month. It's geek stuff, gamer stuff, and you can get an even bigger box with bigger loot, with a service they've got called Loot Crate DX. No, Kieran, it's not the DX that we're thinking of. It's not X-Pac and Badass Billy Gunn or just Billy Gunn. But Loot Crate DX, you will get wearables, accessories, all kinds of stuff. Now, here's the cool thing about Loot Crate. Every month, they don't just, like, shove random stuff in a box. That would be ridiculous. What they do is they pick a theme every month. We've seen themes like dystopias. We've seen things, themes like speed last month. And this month, Kieran, it's October. Ooh. And you know what that means. First of all, well, it's not actually October yet for us. It's September, which means it's almost October, which means it's almost Halloween, which means it's almost Christmas. But for right now, it's almost Halloween. And so, of course, Loot Crate's October theme is horror. Now, I gotta say, this might be... this box is probably a little too scary for me, but it might not be for you. But they're taking 40 years of creepy, campy, bloody icons and putting them in the crate this month. You're going to get stuff from Nightmare on Elm Street, from Friday the 13th, from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, from Halloween, and there's a little something. It's kind of based on this independent black and white comic called The Walking Dead, which I think it's an Image book. But yeah, they're going to have something in there too. You may have heard of it, I think. So if you want to get a box of horror themed stuff, including stuff from all of those franchises, and each box has a t-shirt, there's pins in there. You can get more wearable stuff from Loot Crate DX. What you need to do, is before the 19th, before October 19th, you need to go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and use that coupon code WarRocketAjax to save $3 off on a new subscription. And when I say $3 on a new subscription, this stuff starts at less than $20 already. So that's a pretty significant dent in it. Loot Crate has sponsored the show for the past few months. We really want to thank them for that. And if you want to thank them for that, the best way to do it, head over there, use the coupon code WarRocketAjax at lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. And that way, we're all supporting the show and we're all having a spooky time. So, Kieran, are we ready to go into our interview with Tom Fowler?
I'm ready.
Just real quick, just want to give everybody a heads up, quick content warning about this this interview with Tom Fowler. We do discuss metaphorical sexual assault pretty early on in the interview. So be advised, we will be back after the break talking to Tom Fowler.
Pop your peepers and out your sneakers. Don't sleep.
Joining us for the program this week, we're very pleased, Kieran and I, to welcome back a good friend of the show, someone we've talked to a lot. You'll know him as I would say one of the best artists around, like genuinely.
I would agree.
If you want the best commission of your life, go see this guy at a con. Preferably, like, arrange it with him before the con.
At table Q8 in NYCC.
Are you doing NYCC this year?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Tom Fowler is here.
Hello,
Tom. I guess I should say your latest project is Rick and Morty Volume 3, out from Oni Press, which just hit shelves last week in paperback.
Yes.
But I want to talk about commissions.
Okay.
Because you're going to be at NYCC.
Yeah.
I have. I think I've only got the one. I think I've only got the demon that you did for me in my Kirby book.
Sure, I did something else at some point. I can't remember what, though.
I feel like you have, but the demon's the one that I always show.
Oh,
people.
I did a Destro for you.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
That's right, you did. That's in my more recent book, my favorites book. I knew there was something else. But whenever I'm showing off my convention sketchbooks, my commissions or something, I always pull out that Kirby book and I'm always like, hey, check this out. And it's very easy to turn to because it is
because it buckled all the pages. It is itself 2 inches thick.
Yeah, it's the best. And I know that you are someone who you have a history even on this show with strange and unusual commissions.
Oh, yeah. I got contacted by Vice to talk about that. And they they mistakenly thought I had been one of the people who'd been approached by the now famous in Toronto glue guy, or infamous. But I wanted.
I think I know about the glue guy. Well, everybody knows about the glue. Listeners.
Yeah, if you've spoken to any cartoonist who's ever, you know, who was around at a certain time in Toronto, you've heard about the glue guy. What I did wind up doing was talking about robbing a pervert of it, like robbing a creep of his boner in Charlotte, which is, you know, any cartoonist's job really is to rob boners.
Now this happened in Charlotte, so I can only assume it was me.
No, it wasn't. It was somebody even creepier than you.
Oh, was it Matt?
I don't want to say.
So now is this a Vice exclusive, or can you share
this
story?
No, it was this guy, and he hit a lot of people that week, and it was almost kind of stealthy. I mean, I should have, if I was paying more attention, I would have clocked him as a creep, like coming a lot sooner. But because he had creep just oozing out of his pores, literally, and. He was getting a lot of guys to do commissions. It was kind of like a weird stealth technique to get guys to do commissions of the famous moments of metaphorical rape in the Marvel Universe. Ooh, so like Savage Land, what's her name? Savage Land, Rogue, and Sauron. There was something with Jocasta at some point, you know, Tigra being menaced in the shower, you know, like that kind of these weird moments in Marvel history where you know what they were getting at. But, you know, these were comics that were being done by 8-year-olds, so they couldn't actually, you know, put a penis in a vagina. However, reptilian. But yeah, so he, you know, comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, would you like to do a commission of Rogue?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And he's like, "Okay, great." There's this scene where she was fighting Sauron in the Savage Land. And I was like, "Okay, cool." And I wasn't paying attention to it, and I agreed to it. And then he dug out the reference, and it was that period where, like, Rogue, who I think at the time was supposed to be like 15 years old, but was being drawn like she was 25, with, you know, just like painted on ripped clothing, just falling off her body kind of thing. And the second I saw the reference, my heart sunk, but I'd already said I'd do it. And frankly, I needed the money. So it turned out it was actually this moment where like Sauron hypnotizes her and she, you know, does whatever he wants off panel. Creep, creep, creep. So what I wound up doing was like the least, I drew her to look like a 15-year-old. I drew her from behind. So like none of her, you know, none of that was more, was out the way he would have liked. Actually made did my best to make whatever costume was there, as, you know, boner robbing as possible. He came back and read my reticence to actually deal with him as me being disappointed by the sketch I made. And he was like, "Yeah, I know you, you seemed, maybe I'll get you to do something else sometime." I was like, "Yeah, sure." But I was hearing, we were hearing stories about like all like the whole weekend, like guys were like, "Did you have that dude come to you?" kind of thing. So creeps out there. Oh. We talk.
Oh yeah. The one thing I have learned from being behind the table at as many cons as I have is that word travels quick.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're like strippers. Like we're all talking about creeps like all the time. Like who's the handsiest, who's, you know.
Who stands at your table,
yeah,
hoping that you will do something for free.
Yeah, God, yeah. Or who just tries to drift net past your table and grab whatever they think is free. That's another
thing. I had a couple of delightful experiences. You know, Chad and I, we did HeroesCon last year. I think it was the week before X-Men 92 number one came out in print. So we had a book that was announced. It was out digitally.
But you had nothing.
We had nothing to sell except for Downset Fight, which we always do pretty well with. But so we had Chad went and bought like a box of the actual 1992 X-Men trading cards. And we've had those on our table ever since because we got a box of them. And all the X-Men went like the second or third con we had them. And it's been like 10 cons. And now we're down to like I think Bastion might be in there. I think the Weird Happenings organization is in there. But we had a stack on our table and just some like some kids walked by with their parents and this like 6-year old just kind of reached up and like stealth palmed one, like grabbed a card and just kept walking, did not make eye contact. And I saw it and Chad saw it and his parents saw it and his parents were mortified.
Were you giving them away or were you selling them?
Oh, yeah. No, we were like, we had them on the table and like, I think we were giving them to anybody who bought anything or anybody who got a sketch or something. We would give them to them. But we were essentially giving them away. But yeah. These kids, well, that's like, the just thing, too. It's like
if the 6-year-old had just kind of, you know, smiled sweetly at you, you would have given him one anyway. Like, that's what I've done. Like, you know, I tend to give kids comic books if I have them under the table. And they're appropriate.
Which of your comics do you give to children?
How Tunes.
That was going to be my guess. Was How Tunes. Yeah.
And that thing that Tom King and I did where we shot an 8-year-old in the face in the second page. So those two things I give, because one's an object lesson. One's an object lesson.
If you don't do these fun and easy science experiments at home,
you'll get shot in the face.
This one got dark real fast, Tom. Well, this one's been dark since moment one, I gotta say.
I had a guy, I got ripped off like badly because I had to in San Diego one year because I had to get up and go have a meeting and, trusted my neighbor to kind of watch my table. And when I got back, they gave me $5 and said, oh, somebody bought a print, which was like a $25 print, but also there was like $100 of stuff worth of stuff missing from my table. So for the next few years, I taped things down to the table.
Did you really?
Yeah. I have this big black tablecloth that I don't travel with anymore, but I would duct tape things down. Cause I'd only have like one example of everything on the table. Right. And I duct tape them down and I just take those examples from show to show. I wouldn't like sell the things. I had to tape all of them. But at the end of, I think the next year in San Diego, this is dude with like one of those giant, like every year at one of the big cons, some wonderful publisher decides to give people like a garbage bag sized bag. That they'll put like 3 stickers in, but like the idea of this is like, well, here's the thing to put all the free crap you're going to steal from people in. So this guy was like, at the end of the show, the guy's like, literally, he's not even making eye contact with everybody. He's walking as briskly as you can walk and more or less yelling at people, free stuff, free stuff. Who's got free stuff? And, before he says anything, he reaches down.
I'm sorry, Tom. Yeah. I'm sorry. He's like literally walking around going, who's got free stuff?
Yeah. Free stuff.
My God.
And he's not waiting for people to answer before he like grabs things off his table. And, I used to sell and occasionally give out, get out of hell free cards. And so I had a hand of them kind of like splayed out on my table, which were all taped down. And this guy like free stuff. And his hand is already pecking at my table. And he grabs the cards and tries to pull it up and half the tablecloth comes with it. And he gave me the dirtiest look. And it was amazing.
That's like a Roadrunner and Coyote.
It really was.
It sounds like those pranks where people like, sellotape or like glue like a $10 bill to the floor.
Yeah. But and it's like a crappy card.
Yeah. But you know what? Like I would try to pick up a $10 bill or a quarter or anything. But like just walking around going free stuff, like I am glad you disappointed that man. That is a bad way to go.
Yeah, it's just I still have that look. Like tattooed in my mind. Like, I remember the look this guy gave me.
So getting into some more lighthearted things. Do you have any recent commissions that you've done that kind of stand out as being fun to do? I know you just recently, I saw you put them up on Twitter.
Yeah.
You did some really great Legion ones.
Yeah, I did. I put up a bunch of, like all the NYCC, pre-con sketches that I did. I have this one guy who, every year gets me to do, like, every time I put out the notice for commissions or con sketches or whatever, Mike's at every show I'm at. And I think I have finally exhausted the subs. I think I have finally done all of the subs for him. Cause like we're starting to pull from like people who were actual Legionnaires who were in the subs for an issue. Kind of thing. So the last two I did were like Starboy and Dream Girl, for him. And, I'm next week doing his actual commission for the show, which is, Bouncing Boy and Duo Damsel. And let me tell you, don't do a Google image search for Duo Damsel, without the safe search on.
That's another FYI. One that you're going to get a lot of the creeps getting some sketches.
Those search for, they're no. But yeah, so I mean, and those are always fun. In fact, those two were the ones of, Starboy and Duo Damsel, the ones of, Starboy and Dream Girl have actually been sitting on my to-do pile for quite a while. Because I've painted myself into a corner, especially with Mike, but I've painted myself into a corner with commissions where, I can't just do a headshot at this stage. I can't just do like one of those boring things of like Wolverine kind of standing there and going, they all have to have a story, or they all have to have some kind of moment, that the characters are, you know, that say something about the character. And that's a bitch. That's a fucking, hey, I just, oh, it's, I'm, cause I'm only one man, Chris and Karen. I can't, like, it's like every, it's like getting a writing assignment like every time you take a commission. So now I'm like trying to figure out like anything I can do for characters, whatever. And it's to some degree, it's getting a lot more difficult. And because, especially with Mike, I've amped them up with everyone. So now I'm telling like full little stories about the Legion, or rather about the subs. So it'll be like a picture of Starboy, but it'll have seven other subs and Legionnaires in it. And Starboy's like shunted off to the side, but he's, you know, he's the cause of the actual, whatever's actually going on in the image. And it's, you know, it's like doing a little cover. It's like doing a gag strip. It's more interesting than just doing Wolverine standing there and going, but I could pump that shit out like crazy if I wanted to. I can't pump these out in the same way.
Okay, so I've got a suggestion here for you, Tom, and it'll work for all of them. It'll work for the Legion ones really well, I think, but I think you can apply it to all of your commissions. You know, when you're a kid and you like go to camp or like an after school thing or whatever, and you sit around in a circle and you'd each say like one sentence of a story, and then the next person would have to build on that story. You could treat your Legion commissions like that. So start a story in one commission without knowing which characters you're going to get next, and then you have to react to the previous commission with the new commission.
Yeah, because that'll make it easier, Kieran. Thank you. That'll solve all of my stress about these things.
I think it's a great idea, because then you have, like, then you're creating a community of people who are all fans of yours because they're all getting commissions, but then they also are all people who want to know why certain things are happening in their, like, hey, I asked you to draw Lockjaw, and for some reason, Lockjaw has a batarang in his mouth.
Oh, so do them for like every commission, not just the Legion ones. So just start something off. That You know what? I think maybe I may actually
like,
do that.
A flying hellfish scenario where as people die, people inherit the sketches until there's one person left who has the story.
I actually,
this is really grim.
I like it. No, I actually did something like that years ago. I did independently. Two different people asked me to do commissions with tigers. One guy wanted me to do Shazam, and the other guy wanted me to do Commandy. So I wound up doing the two commissions, but they're actually like, and they're for completely different people in completely different parts of the world. And, but it's basically, you could put the two commissions together and the two groups are, it's, you know, Commandy and Mr. Takitani with a jet pack flying toward Commandy and his tiger buddy, just kind of looking at them much more grimly than the others are looking at them. And there was something about that I actually quite enjoyed because it was kind of prickish of me to do, but it was fun. And more recently, one of them put one of those up for auction. And I think I was talking to the other guy for one reason or another. And it's like, well, you know, that there's a companion piece to yours, right? So he's like, I got to find it. So I guess that is like a hellfish society thing. But no, I'm considering doing that now. And then I can put out one of those sketchbooks we're not allowed to put out anymore of all of them together.
Yeah, see, when I saw the Legion pieces, not realizing that that they were subs, the part of a series on the subs, I was blown away by the Dream Girl because it's essentially like a four-panel comic.
Yeah.
Like, you've got, like, it's Dream Girl, and she's having dreams, and all the dreams are the subs running around as stick figures, getting into terrible hijinks.
Yeah, but it's about her joining the subs, and then, you know, a big thing happens that the subs, you know, the subs won the day, but they destroyed the city, and then her getting called up to, and then them having a going, well, it's them having a welcome to the subs party for her, and then a horrible thing happening, and then, congratulations on getting called up to the Legion party. And in the first and last panel, Polar Boy is on fire. And then of course she's in her dream. She's underneath those three dream panels, laughing in her sleep, which I thought was cute. But like, that was one of those things. It was like, it took forever because I had the concept. And the other thing too is like, what the hell? Like, it's so difficult. The other thing too is because I'm on like high creep watch now for these things, I never want to do that. Like, here's a picture of Harley Quinn with her tits out. Like, there are artists you go to for that kind of thing, but it's not something I like to do, and I don't know that I'm really somebody that people are seeking out to do like good girl art, right? So I tend to, if you know, with a character like Dream Girl, like that's all you see. It's like nobody ever tries to get more conceptual with her. It's always, you know, here's a picture of a hot girl in a silver bikini, you know, and it could be her, I guess, kind of thing. I actually put her in the background of another piece that I'd done for the same guy of Double Header, which is essentially just a guy with two heads. Just had her in her role as a counselor, kind of staring off into space as the two heads argue. But yeah, that was the thing. It was like just trying to do something for Dream Girl that wasn't pervy, trying to do something that gave her kind of some kind of a character moment, some kind of justification for existing. And then when I came up with the idea, it was like, okay, so what am I going to put in these damn balloons? And it literally, you know, it sits with you for a while because you want to do the right, again, you know, because I've done so many things for Mike, I want to continue doing things that are good, as I would want to do for just about anyone. As long as they're not a creep. It puts a certain amount of pressure on you to do that. And I've actually gotten to a point, like I've always had a policy that, you know, requested extras are extra. So extra characters that you request or extra art direction, will cost you extra. And it's like an item, it's like $50 for each item that you're going to add, kind of thing. And I got to a point where I did a few that it was kind of my Rockwell period of doing kind of superheroes in kind of Norman Rockwell style situations. And I got to a point where I was like, I'm going to start charging extra for the word Rockwell. If in your description you say Norman Rockwell, I'm charging you an extra $100 because this shit is tough, you know?
So if people are coming up to you to get a commission, what do you like to, cause I know that everybody, and I know this from experience, I know that everybody hates drawing Batman.
I don't know that everybody hates. I know a lot of people love drawing Batman. Batman's actually really easy to draw. I particularly myself hate drawing Batman, but that's just because I hate Batman.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not super fond of drawing Green Arrow either, but that's more kind of, it's more of a personal vendetta. And so I will very politely smile and say, please not either of those characters, but I've relaxed that significantly. I don't have any favorite thing. I like drawing monsters, you know, like I love it when somebody says Ben Grimm. I love it when somebody says Swamp Thing. But that's got more to do with the fact that that shit's just easy to draw. But I tend to just ask people, like, just give me, you know, tell me the character and leave me to my own devices. And you, because people who do, other people do commissions will often, it's by the figure, or, and it's, if it's a full figure or a three quarter shot or a head shot or a two head shots or whatever, they will charge different prices for those. I don't do that. I tend to just say, look, just give me the name and I will choose, like, whatever, you know, when they say, well, what do I get for that? I basically just say, well, whatever I feel is the best image, like makes the best composition with that character. And it may wind up just being like a huge, like smashed up close up of somebody's face. Or it could be, you know, or the character could be off in the background surrounded by buildings or, you know, whatever. But it's just whatever I feel is going to make the most arresting, dynamic statement, whether that's a story statement or a visual statement or a character statement or whatever. I want to make art, you know, and I don't, you know, I tend to steer away from. Again, you know, Wolverine standing there and going, because there's a lot of that. And there are other, and honestly, if you want that, there are other people to go to get that. And, you know, that's cool with me. But, you know, if you're going to have me do Wolverine, you know, I'm probably going to have Wolverine drunk in an alleyway in Mandrapur, you know? But it's just like, I want to find something that you're only going to quintessentially get from me as opposed to any number of other guys who will give you, you know.
So, Tom, we've gone through this entire interview and we've barely even touched on Rick and Morty. You've got Rick and Morty Volume 3, which is out right now, actually. Just hit shelves last week.
Came out yesterday. All you fucking nerds better have bought it.
Okay, that's a little bit of a harsh sales pitch. No,
the nerds know. They know what they need to do.
What was the experience of Rick and Morty like? Because Kyle Starks was here last week.
Yeah, I know, it was exhausting. I love you, Kyle. He said very nice things about me.
That's the Tom Fowler way, is just coming here and throw all that goodwill in the trash.
Yeah, I know. It really is. No, I'm actually looking forward to reading his run. I haven't gotten any of them yet, but they'll probably show up in my next e-box. He seems very much to be up to the task, just based on that level of energy and being a funny guy, which I was not, apparently. I was the emotional guy. I wrote good science fiction, but it wasn't funny enough. So we'll see. No, it was actually it was a great job. I really enjoyed it. I was a little terrified at first, and it literally came to me about a week before I went on vacation last August. James Lucas Jones shot me an email saying, "Hey, Tom, you're a funny guy. You want to write Rick and Morty?" And that was it. And I was like, "What?" And the next week I went away on vacation with my family. And so I'm sitting in, you know, the upstairs of my cottage with a laptop, with my son playing Lego at my feet, my wife reading, and just banging away at the laptop going like, "Write something, write words, write a story, anything." And I had nothing. I had nothing at all until I wound up just kind of turning to my kid and saying, "Son, fruit of my loins, if you were a mad scientist and you could do anything, what would you do?" And so he wrote a 3-issue arc for me. I just grafted Dune onto that, and Bob's your uncle. But no, it was a really great experience. I was expecting a lot of I don't know, network. Do I sound like a douche if I say network notes? I was expecting a lot of notes and revisions and stuff like that. But for the most part, it was maybe don't shoot as many people in the face. But other than that, everything's fine. And it wound up being a really good experience. People liked it. I was allowed to do my own thing with it. And moreover, I was allowed to kind of dig into the areas of the TV show that I really like, why I think it's the show itself has a great deal more depth than your average primetime cartoon. Because all the poop and fart jokes are there, but it's layered on top of this motherload of sadness and recriminations and hurt feelings that just don't really go away. Going into it, my mission statement was the idea that, people don't get better. You get about 75% better and you can deal with the rest of that 25, but the scar is always there. I love the fact that in the TV show itself, and by this point, the second season had come out and I couldn't see it, cause I live in Canada and it's not available here. Cartoon Network wouldn't send it to me. I did NYCC last year, signing issues. I hadn't come on yet. I'd just done a cover. Signing issues for people and people saying "Oh, what about Mr. Poopy Butts-a-Lot or whatever it is?" And I'm like, and luckily managed to get through entirely without any spoilers. The first season, I think the real triumphant moment of the first season is, and the, spoilers for anybody who hasn't watched the show, but in I think episode 5 or so, 4 or 5, they die. They go to a different, they fuck up the world so badly that they have to go to a different universe. And everybody knows, everybody's listening to this has watched Rick and Morty. But they go to a different universe, a minute after a different version of them have died, and they wind up burying them in the backyard. And it is an incredible ending to an episode. But then 3 episodes later, they refer back to it. They didn't set back to 1, it is it actually a driving force. And you suddenly realize oh my God, Morty is living with everything. The family is living with everything that's happened in the episode before. That is still a raw wound for everybody going through. And the fact that a show had the courage to do that, to not just set back to 1, to not just, they had that weird emotional through line, that weird line of pain that runs through the entire thing. That's when the show became brilliant for me. And I wanted to mine that too. That's what I wanted to get into, which is not to say it's the saddest thing you'll ever read. It's not, but it was, I wanted to give my run I wanted to try and give my run that kind of depth, like that kind of, you know, I wanted to play with those toys as much as the, you know, bum and poop jokes. And there's lots of poop jokes in there. Don't worry, kids. Lots of poop jokes. Buy it, nerds.
Well, that is, I think, exactly the kind of thing that War Rocket Ajax listeners are looking for. So definitely check that out at your local comic book store, or pick it up digitally, or grab it from a bookseller of your choice. But definitely get Rick and Morty Volume 3. Tom, we have reached the point of the show.
I have to let my dog out. Wait, just pause. Hang on.
Tom, we have reached the point of the show where it is time to kick it over to our friends on Twitter to see what they have to ask you. Kieran, if our listeners want to get involved in these conversations that we have each and every week on War Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they do that?
Okay, so what you want to do is you want to go to a convention that Tom is at, find him on the Thursday, and ask to join the commissions list. Tom's going to ask you what you want, and you're going to ask him to design a social media platform, and then Tom is going to say, okay, don't tell me anything else. And then Tom's going to go away and he's going to come back and he's going to design like a fantastic social media platform where everyone's nice to each other and like nothing bad happens, but it's not Twitter. So what you need to do is you need to go to find the guy who does the Wolverine going, you need to say to the guy, I need you to design Twitter for me. Show me what Twitter is. So that guy is going to design Twitter, and then you're going to follow that link, twitter.com, and follow Chris, who is at the ISB, or Matt, who is at the Matt D. Wilson. And then
I'm just going to say this sounds like a very involved process, but go on.
And then on 9:30 p.m. on a Thursday night, either Chris or Matt will put the call out for questions, and you can ask questions like the ones we're going to hear now from Chris.
That's right, Kieran. And our first question comes from cartoonist and friend of the show, Michael Kupperman, who wants to know, this is in all caps, Tom, what's your problem?
I don't know. I didn't even know Michael Kupperman knew where I was. So that was a problem. I'm going to say that was a problem. I wasn't hugged enough. I was raised by badgers. Not very nice badgers either. And I have never found pants that really fit me right.
Well, you're very tall.
Yeah.
Our next question is going to come from at Coltrag on Twitter. That's our buddy, Luke Hare, who would like to know, if you got to make a battle bot, what type of weapon would it have?
If we got to make a battle bot?
Yeah, they're like little robots that fight each other.
Uh-huh.
Like okay. Little remote control robots?
Sarcasm.
So it would be like an emotionally aggressive robot?
Yeah. He'd make the other robots feel bad about themselves.
Alrighty. At Euclid on Twitter, Alex Hardison, would like to know, how great is Ancillary Justice?
It's pretty great. It's really, really good. This is somebody who follows me on Tumblr. I just finished reading the first book in the Ancillary series called Ancillary Justice by Ann Leckie. I fucking loved it. And I drew a picture of the two main characters. And that's on my Tumblr. I'm just going to fill in all this dead air, Chris.
I really want to check that out because Aiden has read all three of those books now. And she has been talking about how good they are. So I really want to check those out.
Yeah, no, they're great. I actually wound up, I was in a bookstore like 3 years ago around my wife's, either around my wife's birthday or Christmas. And she was bemoaning the fact there wasn't a lot to read. It was either that or it was driving me nuts that she kept reading the same like two or three Harry Potter books over and over and over again, just because it was like, I'm in the bath, I'm not going to do anything, you know, I don't want to make my brain work kind of thing. So I'm just going to read these same things over and over and over again. I was just like, ah! So I wound up going online and saying like, all right, my wife likes John Scalzi and the Hunger Games. Give me some suggestions. And unfortunately I got a lot of dystopian futures and military SF suggestions, but I also got a lot of like good suggestions, and out of that, you know, I just got, you know, I was able to pick up some Ian Banks books and The Expanse and the first of the ancillary books. And so she's read them all. She read them all a couple of years ago. So I'm new to this, and I attacked it like I attacked Dune. Like I, cause I only read Dune for the first time, maybe a year and a half ago, and it changed my world. I think part of the reason I liked Ancillary Justice so much is because it reminds me of Dune, which is part of why, you know, as lovely as the covers for the books are, they kind of drive me a little crazy because they're not the aesthetic that I would have ascribed to that book. I think they were done specifically to look like John Scalzi books, to sell that book to the same audience that would have been buying it anyway, regardless of what was on the cover. But no, they're just really good. It's just really good. So I'm looking forward to reading the second one, which I will probably start later on tonight.
Doubting Tom on Twitter, Doubting_Tom, has a question for all of us. What's your favorite Dr. Seuss book?
Oh, do I answer this first?
Yeah, you as the guest get to go first on this one, Tom.
I was always very partial to The Lorax and Yertle the Turtle. I read Yertle. I think Yertle is going to win out because I read it like a gajillion times to my kid when he was little. But I did voices for all of them, so they have like special places in my heart.
Kieran, do you have a favorite Dr. Seuss book?
I really like Green Eggs and Ham. Partly like I like the way it builds. Like even as a kid, like it starts off small, then it gets kind of bit like, and it's kind of like bobs back and forth, like as you say, like it's just like it's pleasing to hear and it's pleasing to say, especially when you're a kid, and it's like something you can like as a call and response with like a parent and child, and it's just like very satisfying, like orally with an AU.
Now, Kieran, you cut it a little bit on the recording. Did you just say Green Eggs and Ham? The reason I'm asking is because our listeners might not know this about you, Kieran, but you did not take the lessons of Green Eggs and Ham to heart.
Like, I genuinely could not tell you what happens in it. Like, all I'm going to say is, like, I can hear, like, the bouncing rhythm.
Here's what happens. Here's what happens in Green Eggs and Ham.
Does Kieran not like disgusting-looking food? I mean, he lives in the UK.
Nope. Kieran hasn't, like, I'm not trying to blow up your spot right now, Kieran, but you've been very open with this online. Kieran hasn't eaten anything. Kieran didn't have rice until, like, 6 months ago, which is bonkers. Mine is, of course, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, obviously. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. At the Vaping Seat would like to know, for Tom Fowler, how does one stop the dreams of the ethereal shapes that one cannot name?
Hammer.
Sounds good. Hayden, with several exclamation points, who is JoeMama75 on Twitter, wants to know, who is the best animal person thing in comics? And says, mine's Detective Chimp.
Oh, so see, when they say in before they said in comics, I would have said Manimal. Because this is absolutely true. If anyone owns the comics license to Manimal, hit up your boy. Come on. Let me dig into that. Guy, he taught himself kung fu by looking at raccoons. It's my animal. I like Detective Chimp. I've half jokingly pitched Angel and the Ape like a dozen times. I would love to do an Angel and the Ape book. But yeah, monkeys. I like monkeys. But yeah, Detective Chimp is up there.
Now, are you an Uncle Scrooge man? Because I don't know if I've ever seen you draw Uncle Scrooge, and now I want to see that.
I drew Jar Jar. That's the same, right?
Tom.
What?
That is unbelievable. How dare you? How dare you come onto my show? With this.
I have a very dirty secret, which is that I don't know that I've ever actually read any great amount of Carl Barks stuff, which is something I should remedy. I know, but there's a lot of things to read, and I've got all these Anne Leckie books I have to get through first. I don't know that I've ever drawn him. I you know, if somebody wants to find me at NYCC at table Q8 and suggest that I draw Uncle Scrooge for money, that would be in a way that's a perfect marriage of real money for a guy who likes money.
See,
a guy who likes money.
I think Chris should commission you for his favorite book, and then he can get a nice picture of Uncle Scrooge hanging out with like Stone Boy or Chlorophyll Kid as the next
here's
part
the,
in the story.
Here's the problem with that, Kieran, is that Tom, as an artist, is already in my favorites book, and Uncle Scrooge as a character is already in there too. So I'd have to be double dipping on that.
Oh, do you have a no repeats rule?
Yeah, I try to.
I can
always start another book.
Yeah, you could.
I think this is going to be our last question. My literal favorite Twitter account in the world, at StoneColdHCC, has a question for you, Tom. It's not even a question. It's more of a request. Tell me what the best knife is.
Manimal.
You heard it here first, folks. Tom, that is the end of our interview. But before we let you go, can you let everyone know where they can find you online?
They can find me online on the Twizzler at Tom Fowler Bug. They can find me on either of my oft-updated Tumblrs, tomfowlerstuff.tumblr.com or tomfowlerddd.tumblr.com. And other than that, I have a very risque site of just pictures of me dressed like Odie.
Yeah, I would say don't look for that one. Our guest has been Tom Fowler.
It's going to be hard to avoid. It's going to be hard to avoid, sir.
Rick and Morty Volume 3 is out now. That's the latest. But anything with Tom's name on it is well worth checking out. How Toons, Mysterious and Unfathomable, still a favorite of mine all these years later. Love it to pieces. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. And have a good night. All right, thanks once again to Tom Fowler for joining us. But now, it's the time of the show where we take some listener questions from you, the listener, who has questions. These are listener questions that were sent in to us over Tumblr. You can find our Tumblr at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. The questions that we don't answer on the show, a lot of them get answered there. So if you want to hear what Matt and I have to say about things, definitely check that out. Kieran, are you ready for a question this week? Are you prepared?
Yeah, it depends, but we'll see. I'm usually prepared. But
this is a question that I thought was pretty interesting. Are there any big characters at Marvel or DC that you like, but only viewed through the prism of another character? I really like Thor, but I can only really get into a Thor story when he's teamed with another character that I like. Same for Captain America. So do you have any characters that you like, but only when they're with someone else or as part of a team at Marvel or DC?
That's a thinker. That's one that I'm going to need a second.
I mean, a couple of years ago, I feel like my answer would have been Martian Manhunter, you know, who I love in Justice League, but I didn't really care for on his own. Until that story where you found out that he got his powers through ancient Martian black blood magic, which was pretty great.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to think. Like, I'm looking at my bookshelf now, and it's tough figuring out who you like when they're only with someone else. I mean, like, I like Robin solo stories. I like Nightwing solo stories. I think that there are characters that kind of only exist in orbit around another character, like sidekicks and villains. But I think I don't know if that's necessarily what this question is asking. And I'm trying to think of, like, you know, even like Power Man and Iron Fist, I like those characters separate almost as much as I like them together. So that is a really tough one.
Yeah, I've got my answer.
Okay, go ahead.
And this is going to be... People might not like this because it's like a very, very popular character. But Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, like, I've read most of her solo runs as Captain Marvel, the Kelly Sue DeConnick stuff, and then it was... I'm trying to remember who relaunched it with Chris Anker. I'm drawing a blank. Oh, it was the writers from Agent Carter, whose names I'm blanking on. I read that, but I just, like, they're good stories. They're not bad stories, and I totally understand why people felt that personal connection, and how the Carol Corps was formed, and all that. I just didn't find that connection with Carol. I'm talking specifically Carol as Captain Marvel, because I really liked that Brian Reed Ms. Marvel run from around, like, Civil War, Secret Invasion-ish time. But for some reason, there hasn't been a Captain Marvel Carol Danvers story that has clicked for me, but I like the character, and I like seeing the character show up places. I really like Ultimates, where she's like the team leader, Al Ewing and Kenneth Rockford's Ultimates, but for some reason, solo ongoing Captain Marvel isn't a proposition that I personally care for, as good as the story may be.
I think that this goes back to a conversation that Matt and I had like a long while ago, but I really think that he turned me around on this one. I don't think I've ever liked a solo Wolverine story as much as I like seeing Wolverine in the context of the X-Men. And I feel like that, you know, you can say that for a lot of the X-Men. Like, I like reading stories about them, but, you know, Wolverine, Cyclops, like, even Jubilee, who's a character that I really, really love, like, I really think they work best in that context, like, more than they do alone. You know, for Wolverine, I think it's because he needs someone to push back against, or he needs something to push back against, which is one of the reasons that, you know, Wolverine and the X-Men worked so well, because it put him in a completely different role. But yeah, like, I think that's an interesting question. I'd be curious to hear if anybody else has any thoughts on that. If you do, you can check out warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com to contact us on Tumblr. You could email the show at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can just hit me and Matt and Kieran up on Tumblr. And I think that's a good way to get into the end of the show. Kieran, thank you so much for filling in. I always appreciate it. I always enjoy talking to you while you're here. Where can people find you online?
People can find me online every single weekday at Comics Alliance, where I am one of the assistant editors, along with the other emergency backup co-host, El Collins. I've usually got something in the works, Comics Lines, whether it's news posts, features, videos, what have you. You can find all three of my podcasts at goodeggpodcasts.com. That's podcasts with an S. And I mentioned all their Twitter handles and stuff earlier in the show. As for myself, my Twitter account is at King Impulse on Twitter, which is where you can find me. And I'm like 3 followers away from 1500, so, like, if you want, that's where I am.
And you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr as the ISB. That's THEISB. You can find Matt on Twitter as the Matt D Wilson once he gets back from vacation. If you enjoy the show, why not head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, or maybe head over to iTunes and give us a nice rating or review to help new people find the show, or just tell somebody. Say, hey, listen to this cool show where these guys talk about wrestling most of the time. That does it for War Rocket Ajax episode 323. For Matt D. Wilson, I'm Chris Sims. Have a great week, everybody. Yeah! Flash. Hey!